The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Welcome to Managing Technology the Right Way with your host, Sun Jogal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the hosts, guests, and callers. Now showing you how to manage technology the right way, here's Sun Jogal.
Good morning, folks, and welcome to the show. It needs careful planning and flawless execution to make technology work for us. But how many times do we succeed? On this show, we invite business leaders and subject matter experts with extensive experience in technology management. The intent here is to learn from their experience and discuss better ways to manage technology. To learn more about the show, please visit talkshow.avval.com. That is talkshow.avval.com. Today's topic, U.S. Patriot Act, the Enterprise Response. Our guest for today's show is Andrew London. Andrew is the Senior Vice President of PMO, Operation and Change Management with Information Resources, Inc. Prior to that, Andrew was the CTO with GE Rail Services and GE Capital Equipment Services. He received several awards during his tenure at GE, including TIP Integration Excellence, Sarbanes-Oxley Compliance Excellence, ACE Award of Excellence, and GE's Worldwide Most Coveted Technology Award of IT Excellence. Prior to GE, Andrew was the CTO of a Chicago-based software development firm and chief architect for a Chicago-based consulting firm. Good morning, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. And by the way, Happy New Year to you and to all our listeners. How's 2005 looking?
And it looks very promising. I think that the market is picking up. The job market is picking up greatly as well, and I think it's going to be a good year.
So how is, the world overall is looking? Is it more positive vibes out there?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of activity out there that customers are actually starting to get a lot more interested in spending money. Part of it might be related to the budgeting cycle that they're now able to execute on if they did last fall and what have you. But I do expect it'll continue throughout the year.
That's wonderful. Now, U.S. Patriot Act, we all know that it's there and it is going to be here, it's here to stay. Now, the fact that more information will be gathered about an individual, this is more like about privacy primarily, and we are going to gather information about individual, we're going to gather information about enterprise, and the more information which is out there in digital and electronic format, the more it is prone to duplication, unauthorized access, and distortion. So while we have to achieve compliance, how do businesses and organizations mitigate these risks?
I think the primary thing, and you're seeing a lot of this in the press, you know, there were some organizations, and I'll keep them, you know, nameless. They're in the press already, so people should be familiar. But there's a lot of data that's out there that people have access to inside of organizations that relate to credit cards and people's demographic information and so on that is, in fact, privacy-related. And I think the key one is to make sure that your enterprise itself has a very solid and reviewed with the legal counsel data privacy policy to make sure that everyone is aware of it in the organization, and it is also something that you want published on your website or with your direct collateral about the organization so that your customers can feel confident in doing business with you that they understand what your privacy needs and what their privacy needs are as well.
See, when we talk about information is being gathered and they would only use it for, suspicious activity or anything which could compromise the national defense, the fact, at least there's an assumption by many customers that if it starts happening where most of their information, more and more of their personal information is gathered, then even local law enforcement would want to use it, massage it in any form or fashion that they want, and then, it would create more troubles.
Yeah, I think there definitely needs to be more conversations in the government and then across the judicial system about what information can be used in that particular scenario that you laid out. I think that in general, the information that people, see out there that they get reported on relative to either their credit rating or their demographics or, just general how they actually go out there and buy goods and so on, that's information that, it really comes down to several different categories of either personal information or information that's related to just their habits. And whether or not they actually attach some truly personal data that and identifies them as an individual, that gets down the road where I think people become very uncomfortable. But in doing all of the things that are necessary to really support the United States Patriot Act, that's about making sure that the government has the understanding that businesses themselves are actually scanning and matching individuals against the United States FBI most wanted lists, et cetera, to ensure that when there is an opportunity to capture an individual who might be related to a terrorist organization, that we actually take that information and send it up the hill and protect our country accordingly.
See, there is no cure for paranoia, as all of us know, and I think you rightly said about having more conversations, but they need to be more channeled and more targeted conversations to the people, the segment of population which would be the most paranoid one. And what is being done in that regard?
I think that you're seeing that really get, you know, blown out in a segment related to the medical industry specifically. You know, there's a lot of very personal information that gets identified about an individual that is extremely private, and that's an area I think that probably will get vetted out the quickest in relation to privacy of data. The other area obviously relates to anybody's information relative to some financial impact. I do think, however, that primarily the medical industry will actually be the industry that probably brings this out more quickly for the rest of the other segments to follow on. I do think, however, that people do need to make sure that they tell, you know, whatever representative they're dealing with in that particular area what pieces of information they are comfortable with and which ones they aren't. Because I do think we're down a road where that information will be somehow made available. And I think in general, you know, if I look at it from my personal view, I'm not necessarily concerned that information about me or my spending habits or what have you is captured. What I am concerned about, however, is that I am specifically attached to it from an individual perspective.
So you're saying you're basically being zoned into or zoomed into and saying, okay, this individual is doing this. So literally somebody is watching you like a hawk at any time of the day for them.
Yeah, I mean, if you took an example where you've got an individual, let's say that, you know, let's take the medical industry specifically, that's a diabetic, and that person actually, you know, shops at whatever typical grocery stores in their area, you know, the grocery stores themselves are capturing information about frequent buying habits and so on. And in general, that's a good thing for the business in the grocery store chain because they're able to really stock what's appropriate in the stores, et cetera. I think where it starts to become a concern for individuals, from my perspective, is where all of a sudden that information is now linked to that individual to a medical condition they have. So all of a sudden we see that individual buying Oreos or what have you, and they're a diabetic. and all of a sudden their insurance companies are relating that information together. That, I think, the latter part of that conversation is really where we've crossed the line.
So now, you know, especially with healthcare, it seems like that HIPAA was nothing else but a glorified U.S. Patriot Act for healthcare. Is that what you would call it?
Well, you know, it's different. I think that the U.S. Patriot Act, you know, has a lot of parts to it again. And what I mean by that is, you know, there are many different pieces of the Patriot Act. You know, part of it is making sure that you actually match and screen individuals against terrorist-related lists that the government produces. Part of it also is to give the law enforcement agencies within the country the ability to do a little more, you know, privacy-related things like phone taps, et cetera, without getting the appropriate documentation that was required in the past. So, and there's many more than what I've just mentioned. But I think really what it comes down to get back to your question of HIPAA and its relation to the U.S. Patriot Act, there are some similarities, but I think the Patriot Act really takes a different vein than the data privacy specifically in trying to make sure that we as a country understand who is actually inside our boundaries of the world and in the country that we live in, and that the government has the ability to be able to potentially identify and you know, discuss or whatever term you want to place on that, individuals who may in fact be matched against the government's terrorist lists.
No, that is the, you know, we'll have to live with it. That's the bottom line, because, you know, you could always have things which are beyond your control, but at the same time you can do whatever you can to, you know, make your life comfortable and still be able to meet those compliance needs. Now, when it comes down to actually implementing the necessary procedures and policies in order to achieve compliance, what is the level of guidance that is available? Because when we talk about, whenever you look at any of these, you know, articles on U.S. Patriot Act, everybody cribs about the fact they're saying there is a suspicious activity. Now, how do you qualify across industry, across companies within the same industry to basically say this is a suspicious activity based on which you will create a few business rules? So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's twofold that are probably the keys, and there's more than this, but I think there's the two main ones. I think one of it's going to be relating to laundering of money. Laundering of money is something that's on the government's list as bank of the part parties, et cetera, and money laundering is another list that they have there. And those are typical activities that can very highly relate to, terrorist activities, number one, but also a lot of different things related to drug enforcement and so on. So, when you look at specific activity that's very specific, it's one of those things where you've got to make sure that when you look at money laundering, that's very highly in that area. Okay. In addition to that, you've got to actually take the other key into account, which is the activity that they're doing related to the government lists in that area for Patriot Act? So there are government lists that the U.S. government has on their websites and also makes available to other third-party organizations out there that do heuristical matching against the names of candidates, if you will, and individuals that you need to be screened just to make sure that they're not, parties that you're doing business with and that the government would be interested in talking to.
Now, just to throw a curveball there, do you think identity theft could, put everything out of the door, out of the window about, when you're trying to say, okay, you had somebody change their names and you have a list, but guess what? He picks up a grandma's name and she transfers funds maybe in smaller amounts and, still money laundering is happening and all your checks and balances are not useful anymore.
Well, I think identity theft can definitely add an element into all this. I think that the United States government, though, when you look at the details of the lists, they're very specific about activities and why the individual made it on that list. And these are lists that are updated, throughout the day. So they are very, very active lists. And, identity theft, in fact, could make its way into those lists. I think that the government and the FBI and the CIA specifically are really trying to make sure that there's enough information out there about suspicious activity related to that individual that may be terrorist-related or what have you, so that we're not just getting, in general identity theft showing up in those lists.
Now, other than financial and healthcare, which are the very obvious ones, are there other industries which are affected and in what way?
Well, if you look at the way the United States Patriot Act is laid out, any company has to be able to have a process for screening their customers and their suppliers. And what I mean by screening is screening those individuals against the United States Patriot Act list. Now, that was supposed to have occurred at the time frame of October of 2002, which is roughly the next month after the anniversary of 9/11, a year later. So that's when, companies were supposed to have policies for matching those pieces of information up, and it's typically information like their first and their last name. It could be their address. It might be their driver's license number, depending on if you're doing identity verification, et cetera. But it's fairly straightforward information that you would typically would get off of someone's driver's license in any typical form of, business where you're maybe applying for a mortgage, applying for a credit card, what have you. And those are the things that an organization is supposed to be basically matching up against these lists.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and then start talking the dollars here, like the ROI and the TCO. We know that compliance issues are primarily not justified through ROI and TCO because these are primarily mandates and you will be heavily penalized if you do not comply. But at the same time, a business is a business is a business. They have to be profit motivated. Of course, nonprofits are there, but at the same time, money is what drives business. So what do they do in order for them to be able to comply with this and not get a big hit on their bottom line? So please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
The truth is, most Americans are truly misinformed about health-related issues. Do you know what your doctor is really charging you for? For the truth on what's really going on, tune in to Life Lessons with Dr. Lawrence James Jr. every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Dr. Lawrence James Jr. will discuss everyday social and political issues that affect you. So won't you please join Dr. Lawrence James Jr. for Life Lessons every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Are you tired of sitting on the bench? Are you ready to get in the game? Then join David Hayes and Jim Inman every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern for The Coach, exclusively on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. The Coach is a program by financial professionals for financial professionals. Know the techniques used on the field by top financial professionals for personal and professional success. Get off the bench and join The Coach every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, live on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Papa John's, Taxback, GNC, Subway.
Everyone has visited one or more of these businesses, but have you ever thought about owning one? If you have the entrepreneurial spirit and are ready to start your own business or franchise, then you need to tune into Your New Career with Stuart Taylor every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Stuart and his experienced guests will let you know what is needed when starting your own business and how to make all of your business ventures a success. So tune in to Your New Career with Stuart Taylor every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is U.S. Patriot Act, the Enterprise Response. Our guest for today's show is Andrew London. Andrew is the Senior Vice President of PMO, Operation and Change Management with Information Resources, Inc. Before the break, we started discussing the dollars, that is the ROI and TCO, which usually are not used as a justification for going for an investment for something like compliance. Now, when we start looking at USPA compliance, that's U.S. Patriot Act compliance, we are looking at, okay, go ahead, do data mining, put in some artificial intelligence in there, put some rule-based engines there to identify the trends and patterns of the suspicious activities. Then you have to go and monitor the current activities and even extrapolate or, you know, the future moves of an individual or of an organization. Now, all this is being done to just track the unusual activity, which itself has not been very well defined till date. Most of these issues are going to be, you know, dealt with a lot of dollars being put in terms of just handling it. So the ROI and TCO doesn't seem to be that great. Now, with all this, this all looks very negative. Is there anything positive about achieving compliance and still a company can gain out of it?
Well, I think you have an opportunity where the minute that you're actually opening up a process and modifying that process, you have an opportunity to potentially better that particular process. So I really think you have to look at it that way and say, is there anything from an organizational execution perspective that I can actually turn into a positive there in conjunction with this compliance scenario? I mean, compliance is a difficult one because there's no real return on investment or expense associated with it, of course, because you're just trying to be compliant and there's a cost associated with doing the work. However, you have to look at it from, again, what I said before, is there any benefit that I can gain in addition to making these changes in an existing process? And then I think you got to look at it and say, geez, if I actually am not compliant, how much is the government going to fine me or levy me, and what kind of negative press am I going to get out there that's going to really impact, you know, negatively my ability to execute as a business because customers are hearing about it?
So, you know, when we talk about the fact that, you know, there are other compliance issues, Sarbanes-Oxley and HIPAA and other things that we have seen, we heard a lot more about them than we ever heard about this U.S. Patriot Act. While it could be the most severe in terms of the penalties and or the repercussions for people who are at default. So why is that? Why is there not enough communication from government side, among the society leaders and, you know, groups. So why is this happening?
You know, I think it's primarily because, you know, the government is not wanting to really broadcast as much information out there about what they're watching and who they're watching and so on. You know, for obvious reasons, I think it would you know, attract a lot of attention data privacy-wise and get people's arms up in the air a lot more on that particular issue. And I think the other one, obviously, is that you don't want to, you know, tip off anyone that anything is going on and how you're going about it, you know, allowing a terrorist or a terrorist group to be able to create processes that countermine what you're trying to do from a governmental perspective in protecting the country. I think the other part of it is as well is that it is going on quietly, and there are a lot of parts of that U.S. Patriot Act that, you know, are really visible to the public, primarily the ones related to the judicial and law enforcement, you know, tapping of phones and so on. That one people are very keen on. But the other pieces that are going on that they're not as keen on is, and I use the example in the earlier part of this session, you know, when you go in for a mortgage and apply for a loan, your information meaning who you are as your identity and where you live, is in fact being screened if the company that you're doing business with is following that act. And again, what I mean by screened is that information is being heuristically matched up against the government-provided lists. So, you know, don't kid yourself, it's going on. It's just not something that's really hitting the mainstream news.
Now, we have another issue which was true for other compliance as well, and this could even make it worse, is the issue of the record retention period requirements. You know, now people are talking about 20 years, 10, 15 years, 20 years for the, this is the number of years a company has to retain records of their transactions so that government would want to come anytime and try to look at the historical data. So the impact on storage, the storage management, the whole area related to storage has been severely impacted. People say, yes, storage is cheap, but it's no longer cheap because there's a lot many more strings attached when we talk about this much data. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, it all comes down to the solution that's been deployed within the organization to cover the matching side of this. In actuality, the solutions that I've employed or deployed when I was at GE, the data side of it, as far as keeping the records for that long and the amount of data, is actually not that big. The longevity of the data and the way that you need to keep it is a bigger issue, and that's really a process side. But really what the government's going to be looking for is that when you took this information of your suppliers and customers and matched it up against the government lists, the government's going to be interested in you keeping the records of what data you did match and what matches you actually got out of it and what investigation did you actually do to make sure that you as an organization were comfortable that that individual or what have you was not in fact related to the industry list at that point in time. So I don't think it's as big on the data capacity side as you might think. But again, that depends on the type of solution that actually your organization deployed.
I mean, with GE, we know that they would have picked up the best of the breed, but we are talking about companies which are not as large and are not as resourceful, and even them, they are being put under the gun to deploy something similar. Now, there's a financial impact, there's a management impact, there's a, you can say the same resources, not only dollars, but also human resource could be channelized into doing something more productive than you just keep on recording and then maintaining and then backing up. You got to take as much backup off-site, you know, the typical hot site, warm site kind of mm-hmm. situation.
Sure.
So now looking at the infrastructure, now other than the storage, we have similar issues in terms of the trend pattern identification-related software needs of an organization. Since we know large financial institutions were already having these things in place, like, you know, long, long before this Patriot Act ever came into being, and they would definitely have to further enhance it. That is one area that we could discuss. Second is the smaller outfits who need to invest that from, you know, they were, I think, piggybacking on some larger organizations. Now they have to have their own systems, and they have to be developed from scratch. So other than the consulting firms and the system integrators, you know, there seem to be nobody who is actually benefiting out of this exercise.
Well, you know, that's actually a really, you know, valid question, and I think that, again, I really started to talk already about is the type of solution that you deploy. And I think probably the best way to answer that one, you know, Sanjo, is to really talk about the type of solution that got deployed at GE. And you're right, the financial institutions already were doing a lot of screening against customers already because of, you know, the money laundering issue, et cetera, and those lists that were already out there by the government. So let's take a look at that process, and I'll speak in that vein. And, you know, obviously if the listeners have questions, that would be, you know, appropriate to call back in. The real piece there is when you look at the actual government lists, I think that the risk that a company has in those lists is, number one, maintaining those lists from a standpoint of keeping them accurate and up to date with the government, you know, reports out on the data, because it happens so quickly throughout the day, as I've seen it myself. And that's not a risk that I'm not sure as a company I'm willing to take in. I want to make sure that I match my customer-related data from a CRM solution and my supplier-related or vendor-related data and match that up on a regular basis. But I don't want to have to worry about having people maintaining lists that the government's constantly changing, because that could get very costly and turn into a real domino effect in itself. The type of solution that you want to be looking for is you don't also want to have to build your own heuristical engine to match all this information up. So in the scenario that I'm talking about, we looked at actually an organization, and there are several out there, but this is one I think that hit the bill the best. It was an inexpensive solution, but also gave us the capability to shift some of the risk on maintaining the data and the lists to that organization. And that information was then kept up to date and made available through that company as part of a service. And that company's name actually is, they have a system called Bridger Systems, which is also ChoicePoint. And they actually are in Bozeman, Montana, and they have a great solution that really handles this well and for a very appropriate amount of money. And that makes the whole implication of this from an IT perspective and a system perspective on an organization, I think, much more limited, and actually was able to be deployed very quickly. So, you know, you look at it from that perspective, the solution is really critical, the right one that you put in place, so that you're not adding in additional unnecessary consulting fees or processes that don't necessarily need to be there.
So you mean to say that the package solution that you deployed was like a, you know, cure-all kind of software?
You know, it's probably, I wouldn't say it's cure-all, but I'd say it was a very, very high degree of cure for what we were looking to do and what we needed to do. And that, you know, that's a difficult type of solution to find in the industry. So I think that their solution really fit the bill extremely well.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about the overall IT infrastructure, which needs to be planned, prepared, and deployed in an enterprise, and it could be for small to mid to very large size organizations in order to comply with the U.S. Patriot Act. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
You hear business show after business show all geared towards improving a company's bottom line. But what about your bottom line? How come no one ever talks about that? Finally, a show dedicated to the worker, The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, The Crow Show is aimed specifically at the worker and their environment. From work skills and technology to dealing with bosses and coworkers, The Crow Show will give you insight on how to survive and prosper in today's workplace. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line of Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Politics and business go hand in hand. To find out how, tune in to the Tammy Says Show every Monday and Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. The Tammy Says Show will feature informative and influential guests involved in the political world, as well as some of today's top business leaders. So tune in twice a week and get your questions answered as she cuts to the chase on the issues that affect your bottom line. That's The Tammy Says Show every Monday and Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business. Achieve Total Wealth Management. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern on Business America Radio. Three-Dimensional Wealth is a show dedicated to teaching you a values-based approach to comprehensive total wealth management through practical strategies and expert advice. Take your first step down the road of financial independence. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
Welcome back to Managing Technology the Right Way with Sun Jogal. Call in with your questions at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is U.S. Patriot Act, the Enterprise Response. Our guest for today's show is Andrew London. Andrew is the Senior Vice President of PMO Operation and Change Management with Information Resources, Inc. Before the break, we started discussing about the IT infrastructure, which needs to be prepared, planned, and deployed in order for an enterprise to achieve compliance for U.S. Patriot Act. So, Andrew?
Yeah, I think in that particular scenario, what you want to make sure that you do is in the solution that you have deployed, the security is vital in that area. So I think you probably want to really isolate out the equipment that particular solution is on. It doesn't necessarily have to be on its own infrastructural hardware, et cetera. That's probably preferred, but as long as it's on a piece of existing infrastructure that is very, very secure, I think that's the key there. Part of the reason being is that you don't want people able to, you know, easily look at the names on the list that are being matched or also have access to whatever solution software you've deployed who can, you know, someone could go in and just type in several different names to see what names made it through and what names don't make it through. And you surely don't want that available to just general population doing that. So I think it's really just an infrastructure that would really support a high degree of security and making sure that you're auditing that security and the access to it, and then making sure that the infrastructure that you put it on supports that as well.
Now, there's another unique, you can say, an aspect of the way people could potentially dodge the you know, scrutiny is by especially people who are from outside country, or maybe they have names from South Asian region or from Middle East. They could, you know, play with the spelling of their names and create as many permutation combinations as they want, and then, you know, just basically dodge. What do we have out there which would allow us to control this?
Well, I think that gets back into what I've already mentioned already in the solution, and that is heuristical matching. That is the key to the engine and the matching process. And what, for the listeners out there, what heuristics really is it gets across to when I have someone's name, what are the phonetical matches of that name in many different languages and tongues. So as an example, if you chose my name as Andrew, well, in, you know, Spanish, that's Andre. So you want to make sure that you're using a heuristical engine that does phonetical matches as well, so that to your point, you know, you're not just changing the spelling or you're not just seeing that name represented in a different language or tongue and therefore able to bypass the scrutiny that you really need. So, you know, the government is not providing you these lists in all these different languages. They're just all in English, but the heuristical engine's responsibility is to make sure that it does heuristical screening and phonetical matching. And that's paramount to this whole solution.
Now, one thing that, you know, all along we have been discussing about, you know, what do we do in order for us to be able to make sure that we identify a suspicious activity. But once we do find, what do we do then?
Well, you know, that's probably one of the biggest topics. I mean, implementing something is very critical, but I think, you know, what the government's looking for in the Act, and again, there is some vagueness again in the Act, but what they're looking for is how is your organization actually going out there and investigating a potential match? So, you know, what your solution software typically does, at least the one I'm used to, is when it has a match, it gives you a percent match, and it will also tell you what governmental lists that particular match occurred upon. And that creates then a suspect list. That suspect list will actually then need to be vetted out through the organization, and I would highly encourage the legal departments of the organizations to get involved in vetting out a very detailed, defined, and written process that they all go through in not only screening and looking at the suspect match lists on a daily basis, but also making sure that when they do find people on that list, what's the process they're using for now investigating that individual? And that would be things like, you know, have they been a past customer or vendor before? How long have they been a customer? What types of transactions are they doing with us? Just base information like that. And again, there's really no guidelines the government has provided, but it comes down to what is typically called in the industry as a quote-unquote know-your-customer process. And those are the things then, once you're feeling a little uncomfortable, that customer, or that individual, I should say, might be a little suspect in what you're seeing, that's when you need to take your process to the next level of escalation, which also includes, and there's conversations around this in the Act, identifying the authorities in the FBI to actually go, identify if there's any more action that needs to be taken from the government's perspective. And then again, once that investigation has been done, you want to make sure that you don't continually get false positives on an individual who showed up on that suspect match, because you surely don't want someone who's been cleared to constantly show up. Okay? Now, you've got cases in different industries where this is really critical. Let's take an example where you have a rental car company, and rental car companies, because it is a moving vehicle, and we all know what happened in the Oklahoma City bombings, right? You've got a moving vehicle that could be, in fact, made into a bomb or some kind of device that explodes that could be parked in an inappropriate place and detonated. So in that particular industry, you want to make sure you're screening that individual. But what happens when you do go ahead and screen, they are a suspect, and they get cleared? Well, the next time that they rent from you, you surely don't want to stop them from leaving your gates, if you will, if they've truly been cleared. By the same token, does your process and the solution you've deployed include a real-time enough scenario where you could stop someone from getting a piece of equipment out of the gate that is inappropriate based on their screening scenario? And, you know, again, it's that whole liability associated with it. You know, God forbid someone actually did take a piece of equipment out that was within your organization, it did turn into a detonation device, and it was your company's name that was associated with the rental or the lease of that equipment.
Now, what is the level of contribution that you think is needed from the individuals? You know, after all, if all this exercise being done to pinpoint an individual or a bunch of folks who could potentially be dangerous to the, you know, national safety, what is the level of contribution needed from people who know that they are clean and they don't want to be wrongly accused? Because as more and more people start getting filtered through these business rules, which is nothing else but a machine, it's not human, so it is bound to have some errors in there. So what they can do to minimize, or you can say they increase the degree of accuracy of such engines, or, you know, what can we get from them so that this happens?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that you can do as an organization. You can do a pre-screen of your, you know, customer information and supplier vendor information through the system so that you can have a preliminary list as you're, you know, rolling this solution out that would say who you potentially have on the list that's a suspect, and then, you know, do some proactive things with those customers depending on how you know, important they are to your business and so on, so that they don't get held up in the normal execution of business, okay? I think that's one thing that would make a good prudent sense. I think another thing really gets back to what I said already, which was when you do have more information about that individual that says that they, in fact, are appropriately clean, you want to make sure that you refeed that information back into the system so that, again, it doesn't kick them out as a false positive. By the same token, however, and this is a critical piece, you've got to make sure that you track the information that you use to clear that individual in the system as well, because the government lists do change. So there might be something that informationally that the government provided and added to the list for that particular person that now makes them a potential match again. So what I mean by that is, let's take my name again, Andrew London, and let's say that you had my name and you had my address. And I came up on the match list the first time, but they did the investigation, everything was good, I got cleared, and everything was fine. That information that it first came up as a match, you would now feed back into the system so that it wouldn't false positive again. However, let's say that in 2 days from now, the government adds for me as a name again my driver's license number. Somehow they got that. And that definitely was added in there as a suspect again. Well, that now should be flagged in the system because it's a new piece of information that was different on the last screen and last clear that even more shows me as a potential match. So you've got to really very carefully apply these types of controls into your process. I think the other thing and the last thing associated with that is you got to make sure that you have the appropriate people in the organization involved to make sure that the matching is going on a very regular basis and that everyone understands their roles and responsibilities when things don't work or when things are showing up as a match on a list.
Now, going back to that original thing that we mentioned about, you know, what happens if somebody is actually identified, and then it's possible that that guy comes out to be clean, and then we would want to remove him from that list, so that's a decision to be made. But see, once in doubt, you're always in doubt about an individual. So do we actually, can we actually make it as black and white that, okay, this guy's let go and put into a regular person's pool, or he's put into a yet special list which says, okay, once this guy was actually identified as a match, then he came out as clean. So we still don't lose the tab on him.
Yeah, I think that, again, as long as you keep that information about the individual that cleared them the first time, the key is that information didn't change in any way, shape, or form that would now resurface that person as a potential flag. And, again, there's so many names out there, you know, that are similar in nature that you see in these lists, you know, a Jose or whatever, that don't necessarily mean that that someone's guilty. They just happen to be on that list with that name, and it happens to actually pull them up as a match. So you really have to make sure that you screen people and that you add the information in so that they can be waived, if you will, going forward.
Let's take a quick break, listeners, and let's come back and discuss about a situation which is very true here, is that whenever you talk about a compliance issue, and in this case we are also dealing with customer privacy issues, on one hand we want to avoid severe penalties, so for achieving compliance we actually go and snoop and try to find out if there's a suspicious activity and try to gather as much data as possible about a customer. But at the same time, we are also increasing the risk of lawsuits, which could come into play if customers start making noise about it. So how can we best handle, because, you know, in the whole situation, company and organization is the one which is going to suffer. So how do we best handle this? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back and we'll discuss.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace, as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Win with effective marketing. Win with proper positioning and branding. Win with Dick McDonald on his show Win-Win Marketing for Buyers and Sellers every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, we will discuss the challenges and common mistakes made in today's industry while providing you insight on what you can do to avoid these pitfalls. Get ahead with effective marketing in today's world. Listen to Win-Win Marketing for Sellers and Buyers with Dick McDonald, heard every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, here on the Bottom Line of Business, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Hi, this is Katrina Campins from The Apprentice, and you're listening to Business America Radio.
Do you find that technology is hard to understand? Tune in each week to Tech Talk with computer geek John DeVore. Every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific, John will let you know what is new and upcoming in the world of technology, as well as teach you some simple things to help you use your computer to your advantage. From gadgets to gizmos and PCs to PDAs, tune in and get high tech with John DeVore and Tech Talk every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific. Right here on the Bottom Line of Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjog Gal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is U.S. Patriot Act, the Enterprise Response. Our guest for today's show is Andrew London. Andrew is the Senior Vice President of PMO, Operation and Change Management with Information Resources, Inc. Before the break, we actually touched the topic of where, on one hand, an organization needs to safeguard its interest against severe penalties in case of noncompliance, so they would want to do whatever they can to gather as much information to basically funnel through a filter and see who's suspicious. On the other hand, if they are trying to get as much information as possible, they are also risking or they're exposing themselves to potential customer privacy-related lawsuits. So here the organization is going to be risking its existence to some extent, or you know, financial losses are possible. So what do we do to best handle or create a balance between these two issues?
Well, I think the key there, again, I mentioned it in one of the earlier conversations that we had, which was the auditing of exactly what is being screened and what matching is done. So as an example, a good solution really ought to have a very complete and detailed audit log that would track things like, number one, what data specifically is being scanned for a match and whom is doing it. There are solutions out there that allow both an interactive scan that a manual person types in, especially for those cases where you've got new customers that you're really bringing in through your contract scenario or what have you, and then you've got your existing customers that you have to constantly scan as well, because, again, these lists change on a daily basis. But in that audit log, it would capture the mechanism used to do the scan versus it would be a manual person doing an interactive scan or an actually automated system, and the actual data that got scanned. You know, if there was, in fact, an inquiry that was made by the government, the FBI, or what have you, you definitely need to make sure that you can produce those audit logs that show that information. You've got to be able to keep those readily available for, you know, again, the appropriate time frame. And then, again, by the same token, you want to process within your organization that outlines that you, in fact, yourself, as an organization, are auditing the audit logs to make sure that someone just isn't in there interactively, you know, typing in names to game the system and screen for names that might make it through.
Now, one area was, of course, the customer. Another is employees. What level of training that could be imparted to employees so that they at least are aware of what's going to go on, and they do not get sleepless nights if their name comes up in a match?
Well, it's one of those things, again, I think the process becomes that employees are also screened as part of the HR function, either as a new employee and then continuously, which is key, that it's got to be continuous. But it would be just become one of the normal lists, if you will, that gets scanned through the system. I think that, in general, you know, I don't think you need to say more than anything to your employees other than that, you know, we do comply, or the organization does comply with the United States Patriot Act article, and that's really where I would leave it. Only because, again, in this particular case, if someone's all that interested, they should go out and read the act themselves. And number two, I don't know that you want to give more information than that, because it's probably inappropriate for the solution and to give too much information in that case.
Now, see, all this USB is about primarily information, digital storage, or you can say digital electronic form of information. Now, we always have this issue with HIPAA, with all other types of compliance, especially which is related to privacy and security, is that somebody could walk up to a fax machine, read a confidential document or somebody's personal information, whereas we are working on millions of dollars worth systems to make sure that access is denied to the unauthorized people. So what is being done in that regard with respect to USPA?
Well, I think that's totally at the discretion and the process and procedures within the organization and the IT department specifically. I will tell you, as many of the listeners know, I also spoke not that long ago on Sarbanes-Oxley, and this dovetails into Sarbanes-Oxley for those public companies completely well, because one of the controls there is, again, managed data. But again, that policy really needs to be relative to who has access to what systems and what data within those systems. And that is reviewed on a regular basis to make sure that the access is appropriate and measured. By the same token, it needs to be documented with the auditorium responses, too, so that, again, getting back to Sarbanes-Oxley, you can actually prove that you have evidence of the process, not only to make sure that people have their appropriate access, but evidence that the process and the names are screened and reviewed regularly. So I do think it is a procedural issue specifically related to the IT managed change type of scenario.
So, I mean, coming back to the question again, where we talk about a human being walking up to a fax machine, which is normally unattended, and he picks it up and, you know, walks away, even though you might have a procedure, but what is, I mean, do you think somebody's going to be walking around, a security guy is going to walking around in the office?
Well, that is a tough one. I think that exists out there in general, you know, with any organization, especially depending on the type of business that you'd have, or you'd have, you know, customers faxing in pertinent information that might be, you know, private, very private in nature. You know, I can think of several industries that would be like that in the financial arena, and mortgage and loan processing and so on. But it's one of those areas where I think you just need to make sure people know that it's inappropriate and that there will be strong and serious consequences if someone is, you know, caught and has to be reprimanded. It's just a fax machine is a very undisciplined device because, again, it's a piece of paper sitting out there, and unless it's in a secured area, which would probably be the best thing, you never know.
Yeah, I mean, even talking about, you know, the new emails, web-based emails, which are literally giving you gigabytes of storage now, you know, somebody could casually send an email to himself with a big, thick document out of his computer. I don't know whether we can ever log that.
Yeah, I think most companies today are probably doing a lot more on the email scanning than you might think, and making sure that what information is being sent around the organization or out of the organization, probably more specifically, which would be another great topic for the show. I mean, that's a critical one. But I do think that there's a lot more scanning out there than even employees understand. And I think it's just, unfortunately, it's the nature of the times. Because our technologies have really evolved to the level that they are, that is probably one of the biggest concerns today that businesses have, is that, you know, you have employees, you know, using sensitive data, and you would hope you can trust them all, but that's a difficult thing. You know, and then you bring in the advent of a cell phone today with a picture phone. Ugh. You know, that gets down another area. I mean, I've actually been in companies where you are not allowed to have a cell phone with a picture phone capability.
Now, very quickly, what do you think is globalization and outsourcing-related evolutions in the way we do business is making, like, what is the impact of these things on the USPA compliance?
Well, you know, that's a really great question because, you know, these are lists that are intended to be very specific and very controlled in their nature, and the minute that it goes outside of the boundaries of the United States, you know, you're potentially putting at risk all the information contained in those lists. So I think that an organization must check with their legal counsel before they outsource a process outside the United States related to the U.S. Patriot Act and make sure legal counsel is extremely comfortable with that decision.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd like to thank you, Andrew, for sharing your insights about U.S. Patriot Act and, in fact, your experience at GE, where how you dealt with it and how you were successful.
Thank you so much, and I do hope everyone has as good success with it as that we've had and I've had personally.
Thanks again. Now, U.S. Patriot Act is here to stay, so organizations need to be painfully conscious about strengthening their support that is the information generation focus, then storage, retrieval, access, and disposal, and related processes and procedures. Now, technology is out there to support these goals, and yes, there is an incremental cost to achieving and maintaining compliance status, but that can be minimized with the proper planning and, as far as possible, reusing the existing resources. There is nothing like a cure-all solution out there which would actually help you do this in a heartbeat. It is going to be a planned, methodical exercise which needs to be executed. So let's hope that over the years we find many more organizations which are complying, and at the same time they do not have tons of customer privacy-related lawsuits. Thank you again for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. This is Sancho Paul, your talk show host. Till next Friday, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to Managing Technology the Right Way. Please join Sanjogal next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.